So you may have heard us talk about a guy named Martin Buber. And he talks a lot about how oftentimes we enter the world with an I-it relationship. And when that happens, usually you enter into a relationship or spaces and we objectify. There's an agenda, whether we're conscious of it or not. And so he talks a lot about how the practice should be having an I-thou relationship. And the space between possibly is where the presence of God lies. So I think many of us, including myself, often have an I-it relationship with the scriptures. And whether we're conscious of it or not, we have an agenda and need it to give something to us. And so the practice is, what would it look like for us to engage the scriptures with an I-thou relationship and trust that the space between them, the presence of God, is there? Does that make sense? So that's one of the reasons why we really value a plethora of voices that interact with the scriptures, because it's not just the space between, Waylon and the scriptures, Jason and the scriptures, but also different voices, different backgrounds. And so this morning we have Liz Scapel. She was on our leadership team. She gets to roll off and take a break, but she's going to open the scriptures with us this morning. So let's welcome Liz.
Good morning. How is everybody? Good. So we are in the fifth Sunday of Lent this morning. And for just a recap for those of you who haven't been with us so far, it's the time that we prepare for Christ's death and resurrection in the 40 days before Easter. And we also take the time to prepare and reflect for new things in our life. And it is an invitation to breathe and linger a little bit longer on maybe things that we've wanted to rush past all year for the purpose that we can maybe let some things go, right? So in that theme so far, during Lent, we've talked about maturation, we've talked about vulnerability, suffering, hope, and also the role of permission. And I don't know what it's been like for you who have been here, but for me, it's been sort of like putting your arm in the fish tank and swirling it up a little bit. And what sort of tends to surface has been lying at the bottom of the fish tank for a while. And that's what it sometimes is like for me emotionally when things haven't been brought up to the surface for a while. But the thing is, when these things do float up, we can see at the bottom of the fish tank, right? And it's an opportunity to see what's actually at the root of our emotions, which are our needs, right? Whether it be the need for rest, the need for belonging or meaning, it's different for all of us. Those are just a few examples. And so, in this Lenten season, as I've been reflecting on my own emotions and my own needs, I have realized for some reason it's kind of difficult to pinpoint exactly what it is that I need to be doing to be taking care of myself. And I think in a world where sometimes we're judged, for identifying or revealing our needs, doing so can feel a bit uncomfortable, right? So I figured this morning I would solicit some help and dialogue together about it. So if you can turn to your neighbor and just take a few minutes to discuss, how easy or difficult do you find it is to recognize your needs? For some, it's really easy. For others, it's a little bit harder. And what do you tend to put ahead of your own needs, right? Is it other people's needs? Is it your obligations? Shame? Maybe something else comes to mind if you want to just take a couple minutes and talk to your neighbor. Okay, so if we want to wrap up, kind of come back together, and we'll kind of survey the room and get an idea. So just a show of hands, how many of you find it fairly easy to know what your needs are? couple of you. Okay, we'll talk later. Depends on the season. Other of you, sometimes yes, sometimes no. Okay. How many of you find it kind of difficult? Okay, I'm among my people this morning. So I do tend to find it difficult to recognize my own needs, and I'm encouraged that other people sometimes have the same experience. My main move to sort of avoid emotions and recognizing my needs is to stay busy. And there's a feed on Instagram that I love that's called Semi-Rad, and he does some great visualizations of our tendency to do this. I tend to just have a lead foot and stay really busy and go 60 miles an hour until I burn out or get sick. Look something like this. Anybody relate to this? Yeah. Nonviolent communication teaches that the more directly we can connect to our feelings and to our needs, the easier it is to respond compassionately, right? For others to respond compassionately, but also for ourselves to respond compassionately. And sometimes I think back to how easy it was to access my emotions when I was younger, and this feed has another visual, which I really like, you know. I wish I could just tell Alexa, hey, Alexa, what do I need today? And it would just tell me. But we're going to have to do it the old-fashioned way this morning. So if you can just think about, in the last week, what has been the dominant emotion you've been experiencing? And this isn't to judge it. I would actually invite us to just validate it and be like, yeah, that makes sense that I was feeling that way. And we have a list of emotions as well, if that's helpful. And what do you think your need is in relation to that feeling? And we have a list of needs as well. It's interesting because the scriptures have a long list of emotions. They give expression to an amazing array of human emotion, especially in the Psalms. Talks about loneliness. I am lonely and afflicted, Psalm 25:16. Love. I love you, O Lord, my strength, Psalm 18:1. Sorrow. My life is spent in sorrow, Psalm 31:10. Joy. You have put more joy in my heart than they have when their gain and wine abound. Psalm 4:7. Fear, serve the Lord in fear. Angry, be angry and do not sin. Pain, I am afflicted and in pain. This could go on for pages, but I'll stop there. The traditional Hebrew for the Psalms, it can mean praises, and many of the Psalms also mean prayers, which is really beautiful. And many of these Psalms are just simple expressions of emotions. David, King David, tended to be the author of most of the Psalms. And they also speak to the physical, relational, spiritual, or mental needs that David was experiencing. And so this morning, we're going to explore Psalm 63, and it's also written by King David. And we are invited with him to find rest and comfort, to acknowledge the need for safe love, and to just give permission to ourselves to be emotional and ask for our needs to be met. So to put Psalm 63 in context before we read it, David is king of Israel, and he has fled to the desert, to the wilderness of Judah. And his youngest son, Absalom, decided that he would make a better king. And so using his charm and his good looks, kind of went about a Jerusalem campaign for himself, convinced a group of people. And so David is now in hiding in the desert because his youngest son wants to kill him and take over the throne. This is the third time we know from scriptures that David went to the desert of Judah. The first time was when he was a shepherd boy tending the sheep of his family, the flock, which I would imagine brought on some good memories for him. But the second time, he fled to the wilderness, the same place when Saul wanted to kill him. Not so good memories. And so now here he is the third time because his son wants to kill him. And that's where we pick up. If you want to take a moment and read with your neighbor, Psalm 63. So it picks up, "O God, you are my God. I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water." So we already know that David is in the desert. The Judean wilderness is a hot and dry land that can't sustain life. I used to live in Phoenix, so I imagine Phoenix in July. Things die, right, where you can't sustain life, where there is no water or nourishment. And so this is where David has fled, to a place with little to no distraction other than his thoughts, mourning the loss of what he thought and hoped his life would be, not only as king, but also as a father. And he's confronted with the reality that he is now exiled. He doesn't know what's going to happen. And in his solitude, he is left with little to no distraction other than his own thoughts. I imagine wrapping his mind around the idea that his son wants to kill him. And this is a much different reality than what he hoped for. He's in a physical desert, but he's also in an emotional storm. And I think we can all agree that there are difficult things in life to endure. We share this in common. And the experiences can feel physical, as it does for David. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you. And in the context of his desert exile, we can easily imagine David's physical thirst and his physical hunger. But in his solitude, his emotional and spiritual longing, I think, also triggers sort of this familiar thirst in all of us. It's something that resonates. He knows his needs, and like David, we all need rest and comfort. So something to think on: when there are physical and emotional signs that we need rest and comfort, a sign for me is I don't really know the difference always between physical exhaustion and emotional exhaustion. How do we respond? How do we try to meet our need for rest and comfort? Maybe we pick up a bad habit, or what we think is a bad habit that we thought we left behind. Some of us do a really good job with self-care, like yoga or deep breathing practices. I also found on SemiRad a deep breathing practice that I relate to. Exhale, inhale an entire pizza, exhale. But do we believe that God cares about our need for rest and comfort? And I think we are invited with David to express our emotions and see the connection to our needs. And there is evidence throughout Scripture that God listens. In the Old Testament, God works miracles for the exiled Israelites in the desert by making it rain manna. He made it rain food. He also caused water to miraculously come from a rock so they could all drink. And Elijah, after a battle, receives a death threat. This is also in the Old Testament. He's stressed and he's exhausted. And the scripture says that he prays to the Lord that he might die. He prays, "I have had enough, Lord. Take my life." And so God did not say, "Well done. You are miserable from overwork. You must love me. He waits for Elijah to fall asleep, and he sends an angel of the Lord with food and water. And so when Elijah wakes up, he eats, he drinks, he feels a bit more refreshed. And when his physical needs are met, he can start to relax emotionally. And when we can relax emotionally, it's a lot easier to trust. And it's a lot easier then for our spiritual needs to be met. In Matthew 28, Jesus says, "For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." And I was thinking about the rest and comfort feeling and what that feels like. And what came to mind for me a couple of years ago, I hit one of those emotional, physical exhaustion walls and was burnt out. So I did what most rational people would do. I bought a ticket and went to Ireland. And I have some pictures that you can just scroll through, but I rented a car and drove a week up and down the wild Atlantic Way on the west side of the country. And if I saw something that looked beautiful and life-giving, I would pull over and take a picture, and then I would get back in and keep going. But on my last day, and it happened to be on Thanksgiving Day, I hiked to the edge of Bray Cliff, which is on Valentia Island. And as I stood there, I could feel in my body this joy radiating. And I was aware of my breath. And I was thankful for legs to hike with, to see this and to experience this. And it just sort of put things into perspective a little bit for me. I could actually see color, if that makes sense. And to remember that feeling of being alive. And to be honest, this is what came to mind when I read the story of Elijah. That feeling of, okay, actually, I think I can move on, right? And what made all the difference was doing less, was resting. And it took, for me, going to Ireland in that time to figure it out. But my challenge now, I think, is to continuing to call on that place of rest, because it is within myself, right? I didn't leave it there in Ireland on the cliff. To know that I can be in that state of being and claim that easy yoke and that light burden, that it can be a state of being within me. And for me, that's incredibly comforting. I didn't leave the ability to embrace rest and comfort in Ireland. And we can be confident that God yearns to support us and to find rest and comfort every day. It feels like grace. That's what grace should feel like. So maybe a spiritual practice this week is to find some ways to slow down and reflect on what your dominant feeling is that you've been experiencing. Here's the list again, if that's helpful. And some of us who live more in our heads and find it difficult to access emotions, doing yoga or sitting and body scanning to notice any tension in the body and reflecting on that can be really helpful. So identify some emotions that resonate. And then try to just name the need. And see if you can find a new way to meet it. What different ways can you bring in more rest and comfort into your week? Maybe it's reaching out and asking a friend a coffee or tea or kombucha, if that's your thing. Maybe it's signing up for an art class or journaling. So let's keep going. So David is meditating on his need for God, for rest and comfort, and then he says this, "Because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips will praise you, so I will bless you as long as I live. I will lift up my hands and call your name. My soul is satisfied as with a rich feast, and my mouth praises you with joyful lips. When I think of you on my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night." I wonder if he also used a meditation app. So David sounds like a true romantic here. I mean, he's a songwriter and a poet. But from this place of personal loss and emotion, instead of being disoriented by the swirl of emotion, he seems to tolerate them and use them to see at the bottom of his fish tank, right? And what he recognizes is his need for safe love. Thomas Keating says it similarly, "What I wanted is to fall in love with God. It's amazing what obstacles there are within us, or at least in me, that seem to slow this process down." So perhaps David invites us to consider what stops us from recognizing our need for safe love. What does safe love feel like? For David, it feels like a rich feast, right? Maybe like sitting down to a much anticipated Thanksgiving meal with family or friends. That is what the presence of God should feel like. And that this kind of safe love leads to joy on his lips, maybe like a really good song that just pours out of you. So what does safe love feel like for you this morning? We are reminded that it should feel relaxing, like being in the presence of someone who knows you and loves you. And I have a number of people I could talk about steadfast and safe love, but I'm just going to go for it, and I'm going to talk about my dog, because he invites me into safe love every day. If he had a day calendar, it would look like this. It is the best day of my life today. No. Today is the best day of my... Nope. Today is the best day of my life. If I, you know, am enjoying something, he's enjoying it 100 times more. And so I love to bring him with. Does anybody have dogs? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Right? He's passionate about sleep, which is such a coincidence because I am passionate about sleep. He loves adventures like swimming. He loves my friends and he has friends of his own. And he often knows what I need even before I do. So an example of this, if I wake up, usually he will jump out of bed and he's ready for our walk. That's what we do in the morning. But sometimes when I stir, he'll lay on my chest before I can sit up. And those are always the days that I really do need to stay in bed. Somehow he knows. And they say you should go into the world and be the person that you think your dog thinks you are. And I totally get this. And I do want to step into the miraculous world of unconditional positive regard that is always present before me, like this dog, or like a Thanksgiving feast, or like my favorite song. And maybe that's why the scriptures refers to David as a man after God's own heart. He is seeking that place of love beyond love, of unconditional positive regard, of God's unconditional, unwavering presence. 1 John 4:18 says, "There is no fear in love, and perfect love casts out fear." So maybe a spiritual practice this week can be this. What does safe love feel like for you, if you had to use some adjectives? Does it feel like trust? Honesty? Being heard or respected? Does it feel like joy? Does it feel like the absence of fear? What is love inviting you to receive this week? And what do you need to receive this week? So, well, let's pick it up in verse 7. For you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings, I sing for joy. My soul clings to you. Your right hand upholds me. But those who seek to destroy my life shall go down into the depths of the earth. They shall be given over to the power of the sword. They shall be prey for jackals. So David says these things in confidence, as if they are already true. And it seems like a declaration from someone who already has permission, has the freedom to say and express whatever he wants. Permission to cling, to seek safety and protection. How many of us resist being clingy? Permission to be brutally honest about his feelings, right? He wants his enemies to be eaten by jackals. And just a fun side fact, do you know what a jackal is? It's like a wolf. I have a picture of it. It's sort of like a wolf or coyote, which ironically kind of looked to me like Nash. That's just a side note. But what I notice is that David has freedom to express himself and to say anything, right? There's safety there. And I admit that for most of my life, when I read passages in the Psalms about revenge or violence or wanting others to die, I've always kind of skipped over it because I don't really know what to do with it. Because I was taught to not murder people. But when I was preparing for today, I was like, oh yeah, I tend to skip over the feelings that I don't think are allowed or that I don't know what to do with. And as I was thinking about this, one of my early childhood memories came to mind. It was the glory days, the late 80s. When I was 5 or 6, I'm probably a little younger in this picture, but I was in the car with my older siblings and my older cousins, and at the time, I was the youngest in the crew, and I remember feeling electric with the banter in the car, the windows were rolled down, the radio was on, and I remember wanting to be included and part of this energy, this older energy in the group. But as a 5 or 6-year-old, that desire came out of me like the sound of shrieking, like maybe like a dolphin, like decibel level. And it was pretty ear piercing, I imagine, because the more I did it, the more attention I would get. So I kept doing it. And I remember them telling me to stop. But in my 6-year-old brain, their attention told me to keep doing it, right? Until it escalated to the point they said, if you don't stop right now, we're pulling over and we're going to leave you in the dumpster and drive away. It was the late 80s and drive away. So what did I do? I kept doing it. Until, unfortunately, someone spotted a dumpster on the side of the road, and I did not get put in the dumpster. However, I do remember being held by my cousin's strong arms, lifted and dangling above the dumpster with the smell of hot trash in my face, promising that I would be quiet and not say a word in the car. And that's the earliest moment I remembered learning to dial down my emotions. And I remember what that felt like in my body. And I think it was also the beginning of not trusting my emotions. And so a few years ago, I started befriending my emotions a little bit more and seeing them with adult eyes and compassion. And I've been doing the work of giving permission to my emotions a little bit more and seeing them with those adult eyes of compassion. This may not be a struggle for everyone. So if it's not relatable to you, I'll move on in a second. But it has been interesting to sort of engage my emotions with curiosity, giving them permission to surface with an attitude of, give me your best shot. I'm here to listen and to learn. And the ability to be curious and not overwhelmed or guilty about it has felt healing. It has felt safe. And I wonder if for the remainder of the Lent season, maybe we can learn to give ourselves permission. Permission to feel, to express ourselves, to engage with curiosity, as David did. And so what is it that is always under the surface for you right now? And do you know that our needs are already fully known? Thomas Keating describes it like this: we are kept from the experience of spirit because our inner world is cluttered with past traumas. We all have them. As we begin to clear away this clutter, the energy of divine light and love begins to flow through our being. I told Rachel Lee recently that I've noticed how she responds to Clementine if she's upset or just needing attention from Rachel. Clementine is also the youngest in the family, like me. And this past Christmas at the Zaman party, I captured one of these moments and when she was talking to Clementine. And I rung Rachel up and I shared this picture with her. And when I asked her about her approach to get on her knees and look eye to eye with Clemmy when they are talking, she said, "Yeah, I don't always know what to say or how to respond or what's going on, especially if she's upset. She might not even know how to tell me. But I find that usually just being at her level and being present is enough." And it makes me wonder, do I live like I know that I have permission to cling to God, who offers safe love? Do I believe that God is at my level? Do I give permission to be comforted? And do I believe it's enough? Jesus says in Matthew 11:28, "Come to me, all you that are weary and are carrying heavy burdens, and I will give you rest." Psalm 116, "I love the Lord because he has heard my voice and my supplications, because he inclined his ear to me. Therefore, I will call on him as long as I live." And as we close this morning, I wanted to share just part of a song with you. A number of years ago, before I moved to Austin, I was going through a personal loss. And at that time, a friend of mine sent me a beautiful letter of encouragement, along with a song by Mumford & Sons. And the song came to mind while I prepared for today. And to me, it's an anthem that sounds like a psalm, and it resonates with what we discussed today. Because at any time during or after a storm, we can find rest and comfort. We can embrace our need for safe love. And we can give ourselves permission to feel with confidence that God is at our level with us, and he is enough. And so my prayer for us, Vox, is that we find the miracle of rest and comfort within the grace of safe love. May we find the courage to give ourselves permission to feel day after day and cling to the hand that is always extended towards us, knowing that it is enough. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
And after the storm, run and run as the rains come, and I look up, I look up on my knees, and out of luck I look up. Night has always pushed up day. You must know life to see decay, but I won't rot. I won't rot, not in this mind and not in this heart. I won't rot. And I took you by the hand, and we stood tall, and remembered our own land, what we live for. There will come a time you'll see, with no more tears, and love will not break your heart, but dismiss your fears, get over your hill and see what you find there, with grace in your heart and flowers in your hair.